The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is my phone number. There are some, I think, huge stories. Number one, the United States has apparently rejected Israel's request for a Boeing 767, which can be used for mid-air refueling. Apparently, the U.S. fears that the sale would appear to support an Israeli strike in Iran, according to Israeli news. Now, I don't know whether this indicates that Obama has already won the election, but it certainly appears to be the kind of policy that Obama would enact, given his Europeanization of the Democrat Party. Topic number two, here in San Francisco, you well know, or you may remember, that a violent murderer killed a father and two sons, not gang members, executed them in cold blood, and was shielded by the city of San Francisco, the mayor's office itself. And now the mayor, seeing the light of day a few weeks ago, has said that they should turn young immigrant felons over to the federal government and that they should not make San Francisco a sanctuary city for them. But a so-called commission in the city of San Francisco has taken a defiant stand against the mayor and is saying that the offenders, even if they're felons, should remain in the city and the city should pay for their housing, job placement, and immigration lawyers. In my opinion, the federal government should arrest the members of that commission. They should go in with handcuffs and put them in prison immediately. They are aiding and abetting not only illegal immigration, but felonies. Russia weighs increasing military aid to the Arab world. Oh boy, is this a problem. Syrian President Bashar Assad scheduled a leave for Russia on Thursday for a two-day visit that has been described by analysts as important at a time when Moscow may be considering closer ties with the Arab world. It is the Cold War all over again. Now, who you can blame for this is multifaceted. There's no question in my mind that we are as much to blame. When I say we, I mean the inept, inexperienced Condoleezza Rice's State Department. New York to pay $2 million to arrested war protesters. That's right. You heard me correctly. New York City has agreed to pay $2 million to settle a lawsuit claiming 52 anti-Iraq war activists were unjustly arrested, lawyers announced. Filmmaker and attorney Sarah Kunstler, does the name Kunstler ring a bell, who was arrested at the 03 protest, is thrilled. We definitely see it as a victory, said Kunstler, the daughter of William Kunstler, the verminous scum from the civil rights era. The rat bum, verminous rat, William Kunstler, has a daughter. She, too, is infected with the law disease. I say let them spend it on doctors rather than on lawyers. And, of course, here's another ripe story that I'm sure you will love. This just came out minutes ago. U.S. suspends refugee program after DNA fraud. This comes to us from Breitbart.com. U.S. suspends refugee program after DNA fraud. I want you to listen to this very carefully because you're not going to believe what you hear your government is doing to you. The United States just hours ago suspended a program aimed at reuniting refugees from mainly East Africa with anchor relatives in the United States after DNA testing revealed rampant fraud. Only 20% of those tested could show any family relationship. State Department Mutt Robert Woods said when announcing the indefinite suspension of the Refugee Family Reunification Program, also known as Priority 3 or P3. More than 95% of the P3 program applicants come from Africa. Now, of course, I'm pregnant with a pause on that one. You have to ask yourself why we need more immigrants from Africa. Well, I don't have the answer to that one, but apparently somebody in the government says that we need more refugees from Somalia, Ethiopia, and Liberia. And I guess whatever the mole inside the State Department wants, the mole inside the State Department gets. Anyway, the way it works is this. If one of these, if a refugee is already living in the United States, he is identified or she is identified as an anchor. And that anchor is entitled, notice the word entitled, to seek permission to bring in a spouse, minor children, parents, and sibling. It's the same with the Mexicans in the United States of America. The anchor comes here and then they bring in the whole family. Because we want to reunify the family. Now, you may ask yourself, if they're so family-oriented, why don't they go back where they came from and reunite themselves with their family? The answer is because it has nothing to do with reuniting families. It has to do with coming here and living like parasites and stealing tax dollars and benefits from the American people. So they tested the refugees, and they found out that only a small number of them were actually family members. After the sample suggested high rates of fraud, they expanded testing to Ethiopia, Uganda, Ghana, Guinea, Gambia, and Ivory Coast. The percentages were roughly the same, said a U.S. mutt speaking on condition of anonymity. So the program has been suspended, and the Department of State and Department of Homeland Security are looking into it further to see what we can do with regard to this particular program so they can bring in a spouse, minor children, parents, and siblings. But they have to undergo interviews, medical examinations, and security screening. And as you well know, that requires further layers of bureaucrats in Homeland Security and in State Departments. And so, ladies and gentlemen, there's your country in action. U.S. suspends refugee program after DNA fraud. And now we move on to another story here on the Savage Nation. The phone number again is 1-800-449-8255. If you get a comment on these or other stories, you can reach me at that number. Or you can read them on michaelsavage.com at your leisure. I read an interesting editorial article today from the Rocky Mountain News by William Maloney, the former education secretary of Colorado. It is phenomenal. It is called The Europeanization of the Democratic Party. What he is talking about is the hostile takeover of the Democrat Party by radical leftists, which we have all seen. You know that the Democrat Party under Kennedy was a conservative Democrat Party. And then a toxic brew occurred during the 1960s. That infected the Democrat Party with anti-Americanism and destroyed the Democrat Party. The party became filled with imbeciles who hated America, called the society racist, imperialist, and had nothing negative to say about genocidal tyrants such as Mao Zedong or Pol Pot. And while this raging left-wing virus infected a wide range of American institutions, media, academia, its principal victim was the National Democratic Party. In less than a decade, the party that boldly sponsored the Berlin Airlift, the Marshall Plan, and the NATO alliance went from the confident activism of the hawkish John Kennedy, pay any price, bear any burden to assure the success of liberty, to the blame America first defeatism of George McGovern, who aptly themed his 1972 acceptance speech as "Come Home, America." We betrayed allies in Vietnam. We ignored genocide in Cambodia. We accepted communist aggression from Angola to Afghanistan, and we bowed to humiliation in Iran. And that was Jimmy Carter's legacy. Now, you have to ask how this hostile takeover of the Democratic Party occurred and the context in which it occurred. It occurred in the second half of the 20th century. It occurred because the socialist parties who led this progression in Europe somehow inveigled their way into the thinking of the Democrat Party. In Europe, capitalism and nationalism was decisively weakened, and the door opened to a continent-wide shift to collectivism and the transnationalism represented by the United Nations and the EU. Today, the elitists who dominate the Democratic Party have embraced this new Europe and its worldview. On virtually any issue you may name, whether it be Iraq, taxes, abortion, global warming, energy policies, hostility to religion, suspicion of Israel, regulation of the citizen, UN worship, differences between the European Union, which is socialist, and the Democrat Party are only a degree apart. Recently, Barack Hussein Obama went to Europe, and we saw the fawning reception of the communists and socialists in Europe of Barack Hussein Obama. Where does this perverse harmony come from? Well, the answer is because Obama's view of the future fits with the socialist in Europe. They see him as the anti-Bush, the anti-Bush, the anti-capitalist candidate. Their best bet ever to bash rambunctious America and lash a rambunctious America to the collectivist chariot of Europe's Brave New World. This editorial by William Maloney on the Europeanization of the Democratic Party from the Rocky Mountain News concludes like this. While heir to Western civilization, America has always stood apart in the degree of its faith, patriotism, individualism, opportunity, and vitality. Most basically, the presidential election will decide whether this American exceptionalism will endure or not. The Democratic Party has already given its answer. In November, ordinary Americans will give theirs. My question to you, Blame America Firsters listening to the show, is why do you hate America? Why do you hate this country when it has given you so much? The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. We're open for business. On this, why do you hate America? U.S. suspends refugee program after DNA fraud. U.S. rejects Israel's Boeing 767 request. Panel urges San Francisco to help teen immigrant murderers. Shall I go on and on? Russia weighs increasing military aid to the Arab world. New York to pay $2 million to arrested left-wing scum war protesters. It is the Savage Nation. The lights are on. We're open for business. And I am the light at the end of the tunnel. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is 23 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Savage Nation. Again, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I open with many topics. Normally, it's usually one topic. And one of the questions I put out there was to the America haters who do listen to the show, why do you hate America, which I can never comprehend, given that I'm an immigrant son who had to work for everything that I have. No one gave me a thing. I can't understand why people hate this country. And so I ask you, if you hate America, to call the show and tell us why. We'd like to understand you. Philip in San Diego, why do you hate America?
Well, the reason I hate America is because the right-wing conservatives, you know, they it seems like they hate everybody for no reason, you know.
Philip, I can't hear a word you're saying. Start again.
Well, the reason I hate America is because the right-wing conservatives. I mean, they hate everybody.
The reason you hate America is the right-wing conservatives. So you love the left-wing liberals?
Yes, I do.
You do. Do they love you?
Oh, most definitely. I believe so.
You do. Now, are you yourself of African descent?
Yeah, I'm black. I'm African-American.
All right. And when was the last time a left-wing liberal had you over to dinner?
Shoot, every day, every night. You know,
I'm sorry, they had you over to dinner when? Look, Philip, if you need somebody to answer the questions for you, it's a waste of my time. If you can't think and you're just a mouthpiece for a hating white communist liberal behind you, I'm going to hang up on you. I asked you a question. When were you last at a white liberal's house for dinner? Gone with the wind. See, I can tell you, you know, look, I wasn't born yesterday. The commie was behind them, the NYU commie with the big glasses. The NYU lib commie was behind them, telling him what to say, and right away disappeared already. Ran out for an order of depends. Montana David, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hey, I hate America like the Republicans hate America for being the hypocrites that they are to make us the world's greatest debtor nation. Got 800,000 people in jail for a plant that didn't hurt nobody, and they give drunk idiots 1 year for killing people in a car. They got another 300,000.
So are you stoned right now on your favorite weed right now, as you call the show?
Me down that, because of weed right
I,
now.
Are you that addicted to marijuana, David, that you'd make your addiction to marijuana your be-all and end-all of your political choice?
No, you call yourself a horticulturist, and you know that plant is the greatest gift the creator ever gave.
Well, first of all, I'm not a horticulturist. I never was, and I never will be. I was an ethnobotanist in terms of that training. It is not a great gift. Marijuana is a toxic gateway drug, perhaps the most dangerous drug of all.
Go ahead and hit your Nazi button on me so you could silence me, just like you want to silence and censor all freedom because you think that you're the only freedom. America is a place where you could say, America, I hate you because you're not living up to its creed and giving the people freedom.
I have never heard such nauseous garbage in my life. You're a pothead. You're addicted to a drug, and you're letting this drug dictate what you think and what you say. This is the biggest problem in your life, is whether you can smoke pot or not?
Hit your Nazi button. The people.
Don't tell me what to do. Why do you make marijuana the be-all and end-all of your existence if you're not an addict?
It's the spearhead of freedom. Because it's...
The spearhead of freedom is the right to get stoned? Is that what you're saying?
Later. We have certain unalienable rights given us to us by our Creator.
Wait, you're telling me that in the Constitution it says that you shall have the right to become a pothead?
Hey, in Genesis...
David, let me ask you something. When you were first thrown out of school for being a pothead, how did it feel when you were first thrown out of grade school for being an addict?
God gave us all the green vegetation.
All right, take a walk. It's probably a fake caller anyway. I know this type already. Probably some schmuck in San Francisco with a fake voice. New York City, WOR. Andrew, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
I Mr. Savage, I happen to love America, but it's a very, very simple answer as to why these people who hate America do hate America, and that's because they hate themselves. I've never met a happy liberal in my life. Never. They hate themselves. They hate everything. They don't like children. They don't like, well, some of them like pets, but they like cats more than dogs. They just simply cannot fit in. They've always been misfits. They cannot socialize in a group more than two or three people. And that's basically it. And for the most part, they've never had to work anything for a day in their lives. Remember when you talked about getting punched in the nose was one of the most important lessons of your life? I guarantee you all these liberal America haters have never been knocked down in the mud and had to get themselves up. Guys,
well, that's true for Hollywood, for the bully perverts of Hollywood who were the misfits in high school. They were sexual deviants in high school. They were pushed around, and now they're pushing everyone around in Hollywood who loves America. They are called bully perverts.
Savage.
Going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. Going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. They got some,
crazy little women there. It's the Savage Nation. 30 whatever minutes after the hour. Who cares? The hourglass. In my case, there's more sand on the bottom glass than there is on the top, so I stopped looking at the sand, the sands of time. Tick-tock, 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 tick-tock. 1-800-449-8255. I'll be saying that on the last breath. What if the children gather around and they want to hear what the father has to say for his last words, and he says 1-800-449-8255? MichaelSavage.com. That would be terrible. KCMO in Kansas City, Mo. Johnny, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I do believe that the American people feel like they are enslaved by the government due to taxes, corruptions, and laws that they're being forced to the left side.
That's interesting. So you're saying that the left has recruited many new people because of an oppressive government?
I would believe that is the case. So many people...
Well, but there's an awful lot of people on the other side who feel the government is oppressive, who would like to see a more assertive nationalism, a more patriotic America, and they have gone to the other side. They have gone to the conservative right wing rather than to the left wing. They would like to see a reassertion of borders, language, and culture. So I don't know that so many people are disenfranchised with this overbearing Bush government. I really should call it a Clinton-Bush government because it's been 16 years of a movement towards a Europeanization of America. And it did not start with Bush, but it's certainly ending with Bush. It's been 16 long years, and it's almost destroyed the sovereignty of this country. But I don't know that as a result of these 16 years of the Clinton-Bush tyranny, we are going to see more people on the left than we are on the right. I think that there are millions and millions of people who have moved over to the far right in this country who are never heard from. They don't give interviews. They would not give interviews. They do not answer Rasmussen or Zogby or any other pollster, and they know exactly what's wrong, and they won't say anything about it.
I couldn't agree with you more. I agree with everything you say, and, you know, you pretty much are absolutely right on the money when it comes to, you know, the bottom line. But
all right. Well, look, I don't mean to argue with everybody. In fact, I'm sick of arguing. I think arguing has its limitations. And I also think that argument is overrated. Somehow I started to think that arguing is a waste of time and overrated. I don't think it leads to very much change. I think we need something other than argument, which is an Aristotelian technique. And I'm not so sure that argument is what we need right now in this country. I see that no matter what we say, the government does what it wants. And there's no better example of this than what George Bush and the Justice Department, so-called, the Injustice Department, is doing to Jose Nazario, the former Marine being tried for war crimes by the out-of-control, psychotic Justice Department. I want you to listen to Jose Nazario. As I say, this man is a first-rate combat Marine. He's charged with war crimes for his part in the Battle of Fallujah. But it was years after he was out of the military when this happened to him. Listen to clip 02.
Well, it was August 7th. I was working the graveyard shift, so that's 10 o'clock at night to 8 o'clock in the morning. And I was sort of end of the shift, so, you know, maybe around between 7 and 8. And I was called to the sergeant's office on the false pretenses saying that I had to sign a six-month evaluation form. So I show up to the sergeant's office, see the document on his desk. There's, you know, a bunch of other cubicles there. I didn't look into any of them. I didn't go out my way to look into any of them, but I thought it was just me and, you know, my sergeant in the room. As I lean forward to, you know, read the document, feel a couple of sets of hands on me, you know, take my gun, take my badge, place me in cuffs, tell me that, you know, I'm charged with some war crimes, and they handed me over to NCIS, and, you know, they fired me right then and there.
Well, I've sent $1,000 to Jose Nazario, and I'm going to send a lot more. And I hope you visited my website, michaelsavage.com, to see this injustice that's been done to this combat Marine. He is talking about his fellow cop officers who did this to him. He was told to come in under false pretenses, and they arrested him, put handcuffs on him, and turned him over to the vermin in the Naval, the NCIS, the Naval Criminal Investigative Services, who are filled with the lowest slime the military has to offer. The NCIS consists of the lowest vermin in the United States military, whose entire job is to persecute men who are 50 times braver and more patriotic than themselves. And all I can say to you is that we'll do everything we can to help Nazario get justice. Why George Bush is doing this to Nazario and the others like Colonel Chisani is really not a mystery to me. And make no mistake about it, this could be ended with the stroke of a pen or the press of a computer key. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. Kennewick, Washington. Jeremy, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I was just wanting to say that I don't hate America, but I'm very disappointed in America because we're not living up to our potential. Half of us that could vote don't, and we're living in a nation of people that don't want to be free.
Now, what do you mean by it doesn't live up to its potential? What potentially could America be doing that it is not doing?
Allowing people to be responsible for themselves, and they're not.
Allowing you mean the government is in every aspect of our life because of Clinton Bush, 16 years of socialism. George Bush has grown the government more so than the previous three presidents put together. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, it started a long time ago. This FDR and the policies he implemented has been a crutch on this.
Oh, wait. We keep hearing FDR. FDR was a piker compared to George Bush. I forget his initials. I don't care about his initials. Bush has been the biggest socialist president in the history of this country. In terms of fiscal policy, he's a fiscal socialist. In terms of building a bigger government, he's a fiscal he's a governmental socialist. We hear FDR did it. FDR has been dead a long time. George Bush is the man who is growing government by leaps and bounds, and he's a so-called Republican.
It's just a perpetuation of that system that never got stopped. That's where the start of that system is.
But wait a minute. It did get stopped for a while. Ronald Reagan turned that back. He shrank government in certain ways. Not, I don't think dramatically, but he talked about it. He enlightened the American people that the government was not the solution to their problems. And when Clinton became president, he turned it around. He made government bigger. And, of course, Bush did even a worse job in terms of making government overbearingly a Goliath. Thank you for the call. We're never going to fix this. It's impossible. I think we're just wasting our time here on talk radio if we think we're going to change anything by talking about it. I don't think talk is going to change a thing. I think we're living in extreme times, and I believe that the governmental officials have become totally totalitarian. I believe they're no different than Vladimir Putin. They just couch their actions in flowery words. Putin does what they do, only he does it without apologizing for it. They do it and pretend that they're doing it for the freedom of others. That's how I see it. How do you see it? Chicago, Illinois, WIND in Chicago, the Windy City. Matt, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yes, I do believe that we are doing a good thing. We are making a difference, especially your show. I strongly believe that. I did want to comment on the you were talking about the refugees earlier. I've done some training with refugees, and it's job training. And what we do is we help them basically to train them so they can get jobs when they come here. But you're right in saying that a certain percentage of them, now some do go off and become very successful and work really hard and live the American dream. But there are some, and a good percentage of it, that don't end up doing that, that just basically become parasites and live off the welfare system and public assistance.
Now, are there various nationalities that are more given to the parasitical conclusion than others that you'd care to mention?
I would tend to say,
tell you what. No, let's say this. Don't answer the question, but just answer it generically. Are there certain nations that send more parasites here than others?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay. So it's pretty true, and we all know it, that certain nationalities are lazy bums who come over here to suck the system dry, and other nationalities come here to work very hard and try to live out the American dream the best they can, knowing that their children have the chance to do better than they would, and will wait their turn at the back of the bus until their children's turn comes, as did my grandfather and father. But there are others who come here and step on everyone's toes and want to go to the head of the bus and seize the wheel and take it over. Isn't that true?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We see it a lot. We see
and
it a lot.
And, of course, we won't mention which nationalities those are because we're not going to give my enemies any ammunition.
Right. But
now, isn't it interesting that we can just point out that there are differences in various nationalities without pointing out which ones they are? I think that's wonderful. That's the new Michael Savage. He's discovered a new methodology to get the truth out without being attacked. I have become the masked man, the Lone Ranger. I know how to do it now. I'm not giving you any power over me, but I'm going to expose you anyway through your own hatred, enemies. Play Kansas City for me again. I want to hear that song. It's such I haven't heard it in so long.
Kansas City.
Who's playing this?
Kansas City, here I come.
Wilbur Harrelson?
Kansas City.
It's not Woody Harrelson's illegitimate nephew, is it?
They got some crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one.
I remember there was a riff after this that I liked, wasn't it?
I'm gonna be standing on the corner.
We loved this years ago. I remember this was a big tune.
12th Street and Bond. I'm gonna be standing on the corner. 12th Street and Bond.
Anyway. One more. Just give me another 30
Kansas
seconds.
City, baby, and a bottle of Kansas City wine.
Here it comes, I think. Let me hear.
Well, I might take the train.
That's it.
I might take the plane.
The plane.
But if I have to walk.
It is the Savage Nation on an ordinary Wednesday with extraordinary insights from the man who is at the end of the tunnel. I am the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one.
Savage. You are live with the light at the end of the tunnel, Michael Savage. It is interesting that the dollar is getting stronger while the euro is getting weaker. The euro hit a record high of $1.60. The euro hit a record high of $1.60 to a dollar in mid-July. But on Tuesday, the euro sank to a six-month low of $1.46. That's good. Last week, the dollar also reached its highest level since January against the yen. It's interesting because when the dollar was falling, a lot of people thought they'd get into the currency trading business, which, of course, is run by pirates and thieves. You understand that. People who are in the currency trading business are the sharks. And the little guy usually gets in at the end. He gets screwed. Then they pull the dollar. Excuse me. Then they short sell the currency that you're into, and you wind up paying them because you're the last one in. It's the same with stocks. It's all gambling. Don't do it. The long and short of it is I'm glad to see this. I understand this is not very good for American exporters, but on the other hand, it's very good for myself because I don't like to see a weak dollar. I like a strong dollar. It gives me confidence. Certainly, I remember when I was a child and we had relatives in Canada and we drive over the Canadian border, and the dollar, when you gave a Canadian citizen a dollar, when you paid for something in Canada with a dollar and you gave it, like, let's say the cost of the item was 50 cents Canadian. And you gave the guy a $1 bill, a U.S. $1 bill, and you took it on par. Oh, he jumped at it because it was a 20% differential. He loved it. The dollar was considered king at that time in America. Now it became a pawn on the world stage for a while. It went from being a king to a pawn. So to me, it's good news to see that the dollar's coming back somewhat. I only wish that currency traders like George Soros were forced to pay back every dime they ever stole from every country by trading currencies as though they produced a product that anybody ever needed, which they didn't do. But then again, I don't have the same view of the world as do naked capitalists. You know, I want to talk about that for a minute. In some ways, I have some wealthy friends who say that you sometimes belie to them, they say, you sometimes belie an anti-capitalist streak in yourself. And I say, well, wait a minute, what do you mean by that? Well, for a statement such as that I just made, that a currency trader should be arrested and be forced to pay back all their profits to the currency that they try to destroy. To the naked capitalist, my sentiments are considered blasphemy. So in that regard, I'm not a naked capitalist when you think about it. I'm a rational capitalist. I do not believe in monopoly capitalism. In fact, it's antithetical to America to have monopoly capitalism. But in fact, today we have monopoly capitalism working on virtually all aspects of our economy. The oil business. You wouldn't argue, for example, that there's any competition in the oil business, would you? No, of course you wouldn't, unless you were a stooge of the oil companies. It is a monopoly. It's a monopoly because the industry is controlled by very few players. And the truth is, so many industries today are controlled by very few people. It's the same with the media. The media is a virtual monopoly on the larger level. Sure, you have two or three or four different players, but they're fixing prices because they control the outlets. And they control who says what and what you read, what you see, what you hear. So in that sense, I'm an I'm not an anti-capitalist. I'm for competition. I am for wholesale competition. I'm for a vigorous competition in all aspects of our nation. But I don't see it. You're not going to argue that the movie business is not a monopoly, are you? A few people control the movie business. How? Oh, sure, independent films get made, yes. They get distributed, yes. And once in a while an indie will break through. But by and large, the pipelines control the industry. There are only two or three families that control all the theaters. Would you call that a monopoly, or would you call that a vigorous competition? And so wherever you look in America today, what you see is not capitalism per se, but a monopoly, a system of monopolies. And that's where my belief system overlaps with some Democrats who I met along the way who are lawyers who sue to break up monopolies. I had a friend years ago whose whole career was built upon breaking up monopolies. He's a Democrat. He's a diehard Democrat. I haven't seen him in a couple of years. But in many ways, he admired me. And the reason he admired me is not so much because he agreed with my conservative political viewpoints as much as he agreed with my independence of spirit. And that's what I'm trying to get at. The Democrat Party today is not really a friend of the little man, as they propose, as they posture to be. The Democrat Party is just the same as the Republican Party with regard to what I've just been discussing, which is the monopoly of the corporations. There is no difference in either party. Make no mistake about it. On that fundamental level, you find that the big corporations give equal amounts of money to both parties, hedging their bets, because they know that one of them is going to win and they have to do business with one of them or the other. And they want to maintain the status quo. And just as the political parties themselves are a monopoly, let's go to that. Are you going to argue that there's competition in the political arena? Oh, really? Prove it to me. There is no competition in the political arena. It's a choice between one rotten diet soda and another rotten diet soda. And if you, like me, prefer fresh orange juice, you don't have a candidate to vote for in this election. You can vote for one contaminated drink or another, one chemical brew or another, but you're not going to get fresh orange juice in this election. And that is the problem that we are facing. It's a problem of a lack of competition. Let's go to the educational system. Are you going to argue that your local public school offers any kind of competition to what the state wants the child to learn? No, not at all. That is a monopoly. It's a monopoly. It's a monopoly of thought. It's a monopoly of a belief system. So there's no competition in education, politics, and in so many other aspects of our lives. So in that regard, I'm actually a true capitalist. And the naked capitalist, the pirate in the capitalist world, is actually anti-capitalist. They're a monopolist, the very type of individual that who Theodore Roosevelt attacked with his populist message and a campaign in the early 1900s. Remember, Theodore Roosevelt ran as a populist, and his principal message was bust the trusts. Now, we call corporations today, a trust is considered a corporation. But he was out to break up the Standard Oil Trust that Rockefeller had created. There was one monolithic oil company throughout the United States of America, and I think it was Standard Oil of New Jersey. He said bust the trusts, Roosevelt did. And he went out to break up the giant trust that Rockefeller had built. Rockefeller then outsmarted him, and he created dozens of little Standard Oils around the country.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. So now all the pollsters who, as you know nothing, they make it up and make believe it's a poll. They say that McCain has taken a 5-point lead over Obama. Now, of course, Obama was away for the week surfing. So of course McCain is going to take a lead because he spent money, appeared. The jerks in the media had no one to talk to but McCain. But I don't think any of that's the reason. I think it's Cindy McCain. She is so gorgeous. This woman is so perfect to be like the first lady. And I think it's Cindy McCain. I noticed something going on as well. Every time there's a shot of John McCain with Cindy McCain, the left-wing cameraman in the media always cuts Cindy out of the frame or turn the angle. They run to the other side of McCain to only shoot him from the bad shoulder side and make sure Cindy's never seen from the front. I mean, you watch what I'm just saying to you. She's almost made invisible all the time. But the minute we look at her, we say, oh, my God, do we want this woman to be first lady. It'd be worth putting up with John McCain just to have Cindy McCain in the White House, is the way I look at it. I don't know about you, but that's how I as a guy look at it. Yeah, she's gorgeous. And yes, we like good-looking women. And yes, we want a good-looking, stunning woman in the White House. Someone who smiles and loves America instead of someone who frowns and hates America, if you don't mind. So don't give me that nonsense. It has nothing to do with Obama and Mrs. Obama's race. It has to do with the fact that he's green and she is a hateful anti-American in the minds of millions of people who have looked at her and have rejected her. And I'm talking about Mrs. Obama. They have looked at her and they don't like what they see. That's why she's been disappeared. Now, if McCain's advisors had any brains, she'd appear with him everywhere. And she'd start to speak, by the way. They should let her talk. Let her speak, let her talk. Now, I know they're listening to me. They have to listen to me because I represent a radio program that controls an awful lot of opinion. And I have voters who, of course, are going to decide on their own what to do if they haven't already decided what to do. And this is a venue that McCain should be on. We'd be friendly to him. We'd be tough but friendly, but he'll never be on this show. And that is because he's not the maverick they say he is. He's not the independent they say he is. But I can guarantee you this. This I can guarantee you. That in their heart of hearts, they know I'm right. That I can guarantee you. 1-800-449-8255. Don't call me on any of that. Instead, we can talk about boring topics such as the Europeanization of the Democrat Party, the hostile takeover of the Democrat Party, U.S. rejects Israel's Boeing 767 request, U.S. suspends refugee program after DNA fraud, mainly amongst Africans. San Francisco left-wing criminals are trying to make sure that we keep teen immigrant felons, including murderers and drug dealers, here in the city. Russia weighs increasing military aid to Arab world, and New York to pay left-wing scum protesters $2 million, and they declare that to be a victory. This is the Savage Nation. MichaelSavage.com is the website. I've asked you some questions. You've got some answers. And I'd like to move past Why Do You Hate America, but we still got a few of those. In New York, on my favorite station in New York, WOR, Ralph, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mr. Savage, sir. Let me say this. When Reagan was president of this country, there was a lot to be to feel good about this country and to feel a certain degree of pride about this country, because the lasting legacy the late Ronald Reagan has left us is the demise of, the end of the Cold War and the demise of a menace to this country, Russia. But that animal boss, and in my previous call to you, if memory serves, you asked me what kind of an animal boss is. In my opinion, he is a cave-dwelling kind who crawl out of there on all four. And he makes me sick every day.
Why do you hate George Bush? What is it particularly that makes you hate the president?
This situation in Russia, doesn't he came across like a castrated person to you? It is very disturbing the way he reacts to it.
Well, I have a little difference of opinion with most knee-jerk neocon conservatives. I am not anti-Russian. Nor am I anti-American. I am a man who believes in realpolitik. I do not believe it is in our national interest, nor is it our darn business what goes on in Georgia. That's my personal opinion. And I believe that Georgia was a stooge of the United States of America, and I believe that the president of Georgia is a puppet of the United States of America. And I believe that if I were Putin, I would do the very same thing he did, which is to say, get out of my sphere of influence, or I'll put missiles in Cuba again. So I don't think that I don't think you agree with any of what I just said.
Dr. Savage, sir, that's like crystal magical, as you would say, because no one has learned in that administration of Bush about history. You know, you said the word Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure Dr. Rice is not a stupid lady. Why is he doing this?
Well, so you do agree with me that we provoked this crisis?
Absolutely. I do.
Yes. Yes. This is the dumbest political series of moves I've ever seen in my entire life. It is like August 1914 all over again. It is triggering World War III. And the person doing it is that moron, Condoleezza Rice, who is a danger to our future.
And sir, before I go, let's not forget about Nancy Pelosi, too. A menace to America. Thank you.
A menace to America, too. Thank you. How can you say that about a nice Italian grandmother? 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com website. I've lost my Telos. Guys, what's the password? Is it the regular password again? Yeah, you don't put that on the air. Did you put it out on the air? Difficulties. In a moment, the calls. Here we are. We got them back. 1-800-449-8255. Here are some other stories from me website. World's oldest man dies in India. Habib Mian, who retired 70 years ago. Wow. He retired 70 years ago. Claimed he was 138. What else? Why shouldn't he live to 138? He got nothing to do there to worry about. Widow of Confederate soldier dies at 93. Married a Confederate Army veteran, 67 years a senior, and she died. Why would she? What? She married a guy 67 years a senior? That means if you're 67, you can marry a one-year-old, or if you're 66, you could look forward to next year. You'll meet your next wife in a few years. God, what woman would marry a man 67 years older than her? U.S. suspends refugee program after DNA fraud. That's a big story. It's on my website. Ex-Marine decries prosecution in civilian court. Big story on my website. Man dies after waiting 22 hours at hospital. I won't have any comment on that. I got very good care Saturday in a hospital. I went to my local hospital. I got great care. Convicted pedophile rocker laughs as he flees to Hong Kong. Gary Glitter, after a blunder by the British government, left him free to travel the world. He's a pedophile. He's on the way to Hong Kong. Barack Obama's lost brother found in Kenya. No, I think I'm going to go right through the break. Barack Hussein Obama's lost brother was found in Kenya. George Hussein Onyango Obama was found living in a hut in a ramshackle town on the outskirts of Nairobi, claiming he lives on less than a dollar a month. Oh, my God. This is how he treats his relatives? Can you imagine how he would treat his citizens if he became president? The Italian edition of Vanity Fair said that it found George Hussein Onyango Obama living in a hut in a ramshackle town of Huruma on the outskirts of Nairobi. Mr. Obama, 26, the youngest of the presidential candidate's half-brothers, spoke for the first time about his life, which could not be more different than what? He lives in a 2-meter by 3-meter shack? And his brother doesn't send him any money? Vanity Fair also noticed he had a front-page newspaper picture of his famous brother, born of the same father as him, Barack Hussein Obama, but to a different mother named only as Jail. He said, I live like a recluse. No one knows I exist. How do you feel about the fact that Barack Hussein Obama, who claims to be compassionate, has a half-brother living in Africa in a shack? Does that tell you anything about Barack Hussein Obama that you didn't want to know? Why is this an important story if it is? Well, let me put it to you this way. What if the left-wing press in America discovered that John McCain had a half-brother living in Appalachia in a corrugated shack? Do you think that the guys with curly hair and large glasses that look like the bottoms of old Coca-Cola bottles, who write the news and edit the news and pick the pictures that you see on your television sets, would let such a half-brother of John McCain go unnoticed? Or do you think that they would be there with every camera available to them to show you how mean his older, more famous brother John McCain is? And so, therefore, it's very important that you understand that Senator Barack Obama has a long-lost brother who is living in poverty and whose older brother, or half-brother that is, doesn't send him a jit and doesn't want to know he exists. What does that tell you about anything? 1-800-449-8255. It's the Savage Nation. Be here. Savage. I flew up from L.A. this morning, so I got a stack of papers in my hand. I don't read them anymore, but, you know, when you're on a plane, there's a stack of newspapers, and one of them is the L.A. Times. So I'm looking at the bottom here, and I couldn't believe what I saw. This I didn't see on the web anywhere. National Guard suffers defeat in budget fight. Now, you may not believe what I'm about to tell you, but California is the only state that gives no educational benefit to National Guard members. See, here we have National Guard members who might be fighting wars on two fronts overseas. And the legislature in this communist left-wing state of California, for the second year in a row, these rotten bums, state lawmakers, you want to call them, have rebuffed the Guard's effort to win state money to help cover the cost of college for its members. Now these bums in the California state legislature, these anti-American bums in the state legislature want state money to help illegal aliens go to college, but they will not provide money to help educational benefits to National Guard members. And again, I'll repeat, California, the once great state of California, is the only state that gives no educational benefit to National Guard members, and that is because of the radical usurpers who have taken over this state from the top down. Schwarzenegger is the only one who can save this. Schwarzenegger has violated the tenets of the Republican Party by saying he's going to raise taxes. After saying no new taxes, read my strudel. He, of course, will probably go along with this denial of benefits to the National Guard. But to the credit of Schwarzenegger, he said that it's not right. And Schwarzenegger proposed spending $3.3 million this year and next to help Guard members with tuition assistance. That is enough to cover most tuition and fees at community colleges or a state university for about 2,000 people. But the bums in the state senate of the state of California killed this bill. They do not want to spend a dime on National Guardsmen. These rat bums who hate the state of California and hate the people of the state of California, but love illegal aliens more than they love the people of the state of California, have a hatred that exceeds that for the state itself only by their hatred for the military. Only for their hatred of the military. And that is a darn shame. California's Guard membership is the smallest per capita of any state and should be at least 25,000. But that's the story. There are people who have fought in wars for this country in the California National Guard. They come home and they want to go to college. And these rat bums in the state legislature said, nope, we're going to deny you any aid in college tuition. We want to give it to illegal aliens because we love illegal aliens and we hate the military. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Indianapolis, Richard, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, thanks for taking my call. I actually wanted to follow up on something you talked about a couple months ago about maybe possibly coming out with a movie, or I didn't know if you had gone any more in depth with that. Or
yes, I am waiting until John Edwards' love child becomes 18 to cast her in the role of one of the main roles. I'm joking. yeah, I was just in L.A., and one of the reasons I was in L.A. was to discuss this film with a few people, and it's going to happen, God willing. Right now, I'm putting the finishing touches on my autobiography, which is Savage Radio Stories. And after the Savage Radio Stories book comes out, it'll be sold only, by the way, on my website for the whole rest of 2008. It'll be available nowhere but on my own website. After that's over, and should I survive 2008, which has been a rough year, I will look into moving ahead rapidly after the election with my life story in a movie. But would you be interested for – let me ask you something. Would you be interested in my book, Savage Radio Stories? I think it's a great idea. It's almost finished. But is that something you would look forward to?
Yes, sir.
Well, it should be out up on my website in the next week or two. The movie, I talked to some really good documentary filmmakers and others and producers and distributors, and I think it will happen. Because I have the audience for it. But we'll see. It's not the highest priority in my life. Right now I have other priorities. And what they are is my business, no one else's. So here we go. Chicago, Illinois. Mary, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Will McCain's VP be a conservative pro-lifer or a liberal pro-choicer?
Liberal pro-choicer. If no, McCain could, he would choose John Edwards to be his VP choice.
Well, that stinks.
Yeah, well, that's my opinion. McCain is – every time – you mark my words. Every time McCain moves ahead in the polls, he does something to negate the movement, the forward movement, to undermine his own campaign. And that's because he listens to people who are his Brutuses. And I have a terrible fear instead of picking a conservative, he will pick a liberal abortion activist. That's my opinion. Next question, comment. Chicago, Illinois. Bill, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I want to talk about Putin, missiles in Poland, and what our response should be to his veiled threats. By the way, you know, he took some Humvees in Georgia along with 20 troops. anyways, what I'm was saying, we should.
Well, wait, let's slow down. Yes, I know the Georgians were in essence. Look, they're at war. Again, I'm not taking sides in this, but you got to look at it from the geopolitical point of view. He does not want the United States putting a de facto puppet state in the belly of the beast any more than we would want him to put missiles into Cuba. But stay on the line. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Look, I have to do this in 30 seconds or less, and I've been thinking about whether to do it or not do it. Most people say don't do it, so I'm going to make it very quick, and I'm not going to try to provoke any sympathy because there's no sympathy required. On Saturday morning, I woke up and I lost vision in my right eye, most of my vision, and I didn't know what it was. And I called a doctor friend, and I wasn't going to go. He said, you have to get to the hospital. So I went to the emergency room. Luckily, the illegal aliens were still enjoying their hangovers, and they weren't in there yet. And I got really the greatest treatment. So they put me in the MRI, which I didn't react to it very well. In fact, I made them take me out. I couldn't handle it. And he said to me, don't worry, 50% of the people don't like it. It was the most horrible place. It was like dying, that clicking, and they tape you down. So I said, I'm not doing this. Give me a CAT scan. He said, now you got to understand, a CAT scan is 400 x-rays. I said, I hate that, but we got to rule certain things out. So to make a long story short, there's nothing wrong with my brain. Contrary to what the liberals would say, they found nothing inside my brain that would indicate that my right-wing viewpoints are provoked by some kind of growth or, let us say, agent. There's nothing there. It's perfectly normal for a person my age. I had the blood test, this and that, but I got on a plane. I mean, we delayed the plane about 3-4 hours, and I went where I was going to go anyway. But I'm not doing great in the sense that I have a problem with my right eye, and I'm really functioning with very little computer use. It hurts me when I look at it, you know, anything. And so I'm usually just think of me as Ray Charles on the radio from now on. Does that work for you? Just leave it at that because I'm not going to talk about it anymore. That's it. Things happen. Things break in a human body, but the beauty thing is that the brain is fine. It's perfect, actually. In fact, the doctor said he never saw such a brain like mine, according to the CAT scans. But anyway, that's it. So I got one eye that works fine. The other eye, you forget about it. I like to put it into your head if you're an enemy of the show. I like to put my eye in your head. My right eye should only be in your head. Both eyes should be like my right eye if you hate me. You get it? And that's it. So here I am. I'm doing the stories, but I can't look at a computer very long. In fact, life is better without it. I turn it off. You know, when I first started in radio, I didn't use a computer because in 94, the stories weren't on the computer. It was amazing. We had wires that came in like from AP and UPI on like a teletype machine. It was almost like Walter Winchell era, even though it was 1994. Now I sit in front of these giant screens like a currency trader. On my left side are all the callers, you know, Bill, Chicago, Putin in Poland, Lisa, Portland, this. And I got to stare at this thing for 3 hours. So I'm up in the morning looking at computers. I just personally think the computers burn my eye out. And, you know, they found minor cataracts, which don't scare me that much because they're minor and they're not affecting my vision. But you don't like hearing any of this stuff. But just the way of all flesh. No one is eternal and nobody lives, you know, in the flesh forever. And the fact of the matter is that my work speaks for itself. And whatever my work may or may not be, I produced a great body of work. And that's it. That'll have to be it. It's not going to wear out in time. In fact, it's going to get better in time. Just this is it. It's the sand. I've been talking to you about the hourglass. I've been telling you this. I sense this. I sense something. You know, things just wore me out. The hatred that I had this year from these groups that came after me started with the illegal immigrants, then the front group for Hamas, then the last group. This hatred that came at me has taken its toll. So that's all I can say to you. You know, no man is an island, and no man can only take a certain amount of punishment. But I'm not disappearing. I have fought back, and I'm going to keep fighting back. And that's all I'm going to say about it. Please don't call about this. You know, I'm not going to repeat this. This is all you're going to hear about it because I don't want to become maudlin. So let's go to the callers. Portland, Oregon. Lisa, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. My husband and I are both veterans of the U.S. Army, and we both served in the California Army National Guard. And I had to pay for my own bachelor's degree out of pocket, and we ended up moving to Portland, and they're paying for his full tuition. He's still in the National Guard.
In the state of Oregon, which is even more liberal than California, they help you with tuition as a National Guard member?
Yes, sir. It's full tuition.
You know, when I first moved to California, it was the greatest state in America. It was the Golden State. And I moved here because I had two young children, one of whom was just entering school. Actually, I moved here when I had only one child. And I moved here saying, you know, I'm a poor guy, and I'm never going to have a lot of money. And I want to live in a state where my child, or then my children, could go all the way through school to any level they want for very little tuition. Everything has changed in this state. It is turned upside down. It's filled with the most hateful, anti-American politicians in the entire country. I'm glad you got out of it. I might follow you, but it wouldn't be to Oregon. I might find relief somewhere out of this country altogether if this keeps up. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. MichaelSavage.com, website. Let's go back to Bill in Chicago because he's been holding. Bill, you wanted to talk about Putin and Poland. Sorry for the interruption. Please go ahead and make your case.
This is extremely important. I think the first shot across the bow was Georgia. Okay, Russia has newfound power in their oil money, and they're flexing their muscle, and they're going to continue to do that. And I'll tell you, the satellite countries around Russia right now are trembling because you don't know how far he's going to take it. Now, they're the masters at bluffing. We don't know how to bluff. We could put in missiles in Poland. We don't necessarily have to. We could do it. We could say we will. Maybe we will. Maybe we won't. Maybe Russia will, maybe they won't. They're 10 times better at doing this. Putin is 10 times better than America ever was.
Well, we understand that Putin is a martial artist, former head of the KGB, and he's dealing with a frat boy from Yale University. What more do you need to know?
Exactly it. Now, let me finish. May I? What we should do, he wants to flex muscles, we should flex muscles. We simply declare we have won it in Iraq, we have a ticker parade, we invite Putin to the ticker parade, we won it in Iraq, and then we take our troops, we redeploy them to Germany, France, and Poland, and we don't say a word about it, and we take...
Whoa. Why do we need to re-engage in a Cold War with Russia right now? Where is this coming from? And why is this happening all of a sudden?
Engage. Who do you think made the first shot? And with all the power and money he's got right now, do you honestly think he's going to stop there? He sees we're doing nothing. He sees how weak we are. He sees how weak you are.
No, I understand all of that. He understands America is a paper tiger. We're stretched thin. The economy is in shambles. Bush is a bluffer that anyone can see through. We understand all of that. He turns on his own troops. So if you were Putin, you do what you have to do to expand your horizons. From the point of view of a ruthless leadership and realpolitik, that's what Putin is doing, particularly since we have George Bush as a lame duck president, with the 50-50 likelihood that we'll have a Marxist president. So, of course, Putin's taking his best shot, knowing there's going to be no reaction. But he is not acting in a vacuum. Remember that. I think you'd have to agree with me, Bill, that he is not acting in a vacuum. This administration has made some horrendous blunders to have provoked Putin's maneuvers, don't you think?
The further we let him go with his plan, the harder it's going to be ever to push it back. We stop it now by our simply veiled threats, just like his, by deploying a fleet in the North Sea or the Baltic Sea.
I don't know. You see, this is worrying me. Now it's starting to sound like the prelude to World War III. I do not want to see this escalated. I think it's a disaster. I have studied the origins of World War I. The guns of August. I do not want to see us doing what was done in World War I when the war started rather innocently with the assassination, they say, of Archduke Ferdinand. But I think that there were other machinations going on around that that permitted one small state to move against another. And before long, the superpowers the world powers got drawn into World War I, and at the cost of millions of men who died for naught in World War I. The last thing we need is the mentality of George Bush involved in another war. That's the last thing we need right now. I totally disagree with you. And I think it's Bush's policies, more particularly the idiots in the State Department, who are doing this. Why they provoked Russia into this is anyone's guess. Now, let's go back a little bit if you want to analyze this from a different perspective. I have studied the Kosovo tragedy for at least... since 1998. Bill Clinton started this when he bombed Serbia, killing 2,500 or so innocent Serbian men, women, and children. Bill Clinton bombed the bridges on the Danube River. Bill Clinton drove the Serbs out of the province or the region of their own country called Kosovo and opened up the turnover of this huge piece of land that has been part of Serbia since the 1300s. Let me repeat that. Kosovo has been part of Serbia since the 1300s. Bill Clinton and the Wall Street gang decided that they wanted Kosovo turned over to Albania. Part of it has to do with oil. Part of it has to do with oil pipelines from the Caspian Sea, just as does this Georgia thing. George Bush, instead of reversing Bill Clinton's stealing of Kosovo from Serbia, quite recently said he's going to go for the autonomy of Kosovo and the removal of it from Serbia. At that time, which was about 6 months ago, Putin warned him not to do it. Putin said to Bush, do not support the wholesale stealing of Kosovo from Serbia. Now, let's pause here. Why is Putin a friend or a protector in this case of Serbia? First of all, they share religion. They have shared many things over the centuries, Russia and Serbia. Serbia is considered a distinct ally of Russia. And here we are taking a drastic maneuver against a strong friend of Russia by stealing Kosovo from Serbia and saying, go to hell to Russia. Now, what do you think Putin did? He waited and he watched. He waited and he watched. He waited and he watched. And that is why he moved on Georgia. It was payback for Kosovo. And I will tell you again, nothing happens in a vacuum. Nature abhors a vacuum. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. It's a fundamental law of physics. It's also a fundamental law of politics. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. You can argue that Georgia was not an action but a reaction. You could argue that it was George Bush and Bill Clinton who, by acting to sever Kosovo from Serbia, set in motion the action or reaction of Putin into Georgia. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I want to remind those of you who are listening who live in the San Francisco Bay Area that the former talk show host Bernie Ward will be sentenced next Thursday. They are saving it for the last day of the DNC in order to cover up what they're liable to do, which is give him a pass. He was facing 5 to 9 years for the kiddie porn charges, and we the people of not only the Bay Area but of America are watching, and we're not going to tolerate a judge permitting this to go unpunished. It's as simple as that. Next Thursday, Bernie Ward's sentencing. We'll cover it here on the Savage Nation. We wish him well. Now, I want to read to you what this immature school mom, Condoleezza Rice, just said to Putin. In an interview with CNN, she warned Russia. She said, when you threaten Poland, you perhaps forget that it is not 1988, it is 2008. And she could have stopped there, but she went on. And she said, and the United States has a firm treaty guarantee to defend Poland's territory as if it was the territory of the United States, said Rice. So it's probably not wise to throw these threats around. Now, this is a school mom who is extremely dangerous in her rhetoric with Putin. That's all I can say to you. This is a woman who should be fired for putting us on the brink of a new Cold War, possibly a world war. It is Condoleezza Rice who is the mistake here. She was never equipped to be a Secretary of State. She has been over our head from day one. She's not alone in that, don't get me wrong. Madeleine Halfbright belonged in a delicatessen in Manhattan, not as a Secretary of State either. And Warren Christopher before her was no better. He was a living corpse. So she's in a long line of disastrous Secretaries of State. I haven't seen a good one since George Shultz, by the way. I haven't seen a good Secretary of State, a real diplomat, who really represented America properly since George Shultz, incidentally. Let's hear clip 24.
It is an agreement, of course, which will help us to respond to the threats of the 21st century. It is an agreement that deepens the defense cooperation between Poland and the United States. It will help both the alliance and Poland and the United States respond to the coming threats.
What coming threat? Why couldn't you say the coming threat of a rogue nation instead of leaving it pregnant and hanging in the air as though you're accusing Russia of wanting to launch a missile strike against Poland? It's as though she's provoking Russia into threatening Poland, which it then went ahead and did. It provoked Poland. It threatened Poland. So I don't think you understand, many of you do and many of you don't understand the danger here, but it is, again, the immature, inexperienced, irrational leadership inside the Bush administration that is creating a new tinderbox in the world. So don't think that any of these actions by Russia are coming out in a vacuum. They're not coming out of a vacuum. And again, I want to repeat one of the fundamental laws of physical science. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Now you may say, well, look, Russia acted and ran into Georgia, an innocent democratic nation. I could argue that Russia reacted to the United States siding with the internationalists in wanting to sever Kosovo from Serbia, and that this was a reaction by Putin rather than an action, and that the actor here was George Bush, or you can go back and say Bill Clinton. It was the Clinton-Bush administration of the last 16 years that caused Putin finally to get his dander up and to realize that we are not his ally, particularly when you go to the next level. Why in the world would you want to put a little nation like Georgia into NATO? That would be the same thing as permitting Cuba to become part of a new, let us say, warlike treaty organization comprised of Russia and China. Would we sit here passively if Cuba were admitted into such an alliance and nuclear weapons would be moved into Cuba? Do you think we'd sit here and say, "Don't, oh, that's fine. We understand that Cuba should be part of an alliance with China and Russia, and that they should be able to have their own military"? What would we have done if we had seen Putin sending men, material, and training to Cuba? We had Marines over in Georgia for the last year or so, if not longer. We had armored personnel carriers. We've been sending weapons to Georgia. What for? To fight the Russians. So the Russians said, before this gets even more threatening to us, before this gets even more hostile, we're going to crush this in its infancy or in its childhood. We're not letting them put, for example, nuclear tip missiles into Georgia aimed at us. We're not doing it. So you got to understand, they've just had their Cuban Missile Crisis. In essence, to Putin, that was their Cuban Missile Crisis. And he was Kennedy, not Khrushchev, in his mind, without taking sides. But in order to be a good diplomat, such as Michael Savage, you have to understand all sides and how they think. If you only see it from your side or the side of your nation, you're not a good diplomat. You're just a dumb hothead, and you don't belong in the diplomatic corps. That's my opinion. Corvallis, Oregon. Paul, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I got a story to uplift you, Michael.
I was
Las Vegas, and I got on the shuttle, and it was just me because they screwed up the schedule. And I'm listening, and the guy's got music on, and I'm sitting up towards the front, and I realize he's got your show on. And I'm realizing this guy is not a nationalized American. He's got a bit of an accent. So we started talking, and I find out this guy is from Egypt, and he's got your show on. And I said, well, that's kind of interesting. I said, what happens when people come in? Do they ever object about the show being on? And he says, well, some do. He says, if they're American and they look, Caucasian and all that, he says, I'll go ahead and turn it down. He says, but if they got an accent, I turn it up. It cracked me up.
No, I have a huge audience on K Dawn in Las Vegas. It's a very loyal audience. It's interesting. I've said this a number of times. Las Vegas is a very interesting remnant of America of the past. You know that? It's a strange thing to say, but Nevada in itself still represents freedom to me. Every time I cross the border out of California and go across the border into Nevada, I must feel the way they crossed from Eastern Europe into Western Europe in the past, because I feel like I'm leaving some kind of a grip that I don't feel in Nevada that I feel in the state of California. Anyway, it's one man's opinion. It's the Savage Nation. It's been fun thus far. The website is michaelsavage.com for these and all the other stories that you've heard today on this program.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Many of the hippies who gathered here in San Francisco during the Summer of Love went on to raise families, write books, and even to run corporations. And they carried with them the counterculture values once nurtured in places like the Haight. And along the way, they changed the world we live in. Today, our generation is the counterculture generation. We may not look like hippies anymore, but many of us still embrace their values.
Now, the message I have is an old one. It's the simplest and most classic message ever passed on in world history. It's those six words, drop out, turn on, then come back and tune it in. And then drop out again and turn on and tune it back in.
Come on, pigs of Western civilization, eat more grease. Eat. More marbled sirloin, more pork and gravy, lard up the dressing, fry chicken in boiling oil, carry it dribbling to gray climes, snowed with salt, little lambs covered with mint roast in racks, surrounded by roast potatoes wet with butter sauce, buttered veal medallions in creamy saliva, buttered beef by glistening mountains of French fries, stroganoffs in white hot sour cream, chops soaked in olive oil, surrounded by olives, salty feta cheese, followed by Roquefort and Blue and Stilton, thirsty for wine, beer, Coca-Cola, Fanta, champagne, Pepsi, Retsina, Arak, whiskey, vodka. Ah!
No, that was not Howard Dean. That was one of the most vile individuals of the last century, perhaps one of the worst people in the history of America, worse than Sacco and Vanzetti. The two of them, Leary and Ginsburg, did more to damage more millions of people than any two people in the history of this country. Now, they are lauded by the vermin in the media. Mind you, I saw a series called Summer of Love on the History Channel. Now, I know that the History Channel is owned by NBC, which means that it's a biased left-wing report, which, of course, you'd expect from NBC. They can't do anything right, at least anything American, in my opinion. But I want to focus for a few minutes on the damage that the hippie generation is still doing to America, as exemplified by the hippies who are running the Democrat Party, hippies such as Nancy Pelosi, hippies such as Howard Dean. I can go down the list, and I can tell you that there's a reason for this anti-American, anti-family, anti-military, anti-police madness. I have alluded to this many times on the Savage Nation, and as you know, you can't predict what I'm going to do from one day to the next because I don't really have any predictable patterns, and whatever interests me, I'm going to do. But I intend today to present the case for you to show that there's a distinct connection between the weakness of the West, the decadence of the West, the drug addiction of the West, the homosexualization of the West, the feminization of the West. In other words, the lack of character in the West and the Summer of Love and the vermin who were behind it and the vermin who are now running the media and the government media complex. Now, the best way for me to begin is again, playing some of the sound of that period. I played for you one of the songs from the period. I think it was called, what was this called? Peace of My Heart, Big Brother in the Holding Company, whatever that was, with Janis Joplin. Now, she's held up as a role model and an icon. She died of a drug overdose. Jimi Hendrix, fine musician, drug overdose. The hippie era, while still held up as a great period of peace and love, was actually a period of the exact opposite. What it did was usher in the death of America as we know it. And I am struggling every day to try to awaken many of you. Some of you are former hippies. Some of you lived through the summer of love, whether it was in San Francisco, New York, or Atlanta. It doesn't really matter. And some of you just had a good time. But what you don't know is the summer of love was not a spontaneous summer of love. The hippie generation was not a spontaneous hippie generation. It was funded. It was paid for, rather. And it was organized by the Communist Party USA and the internationalists who are opposed to our sovereignty. What you don't realize is most of the problems we have today, whether it be crime or drug addiction or abortion or euthanasia or homosexuality as a mainstreaming tool to destroy the family, is all connected to this hippie generation. And the whole struggle going on in America today is between those who would put the final knife into the heart of the animal called America, or the bull called America, or the eagle called America, and those of us who want to kill those who want to kill us. It's as simple as that. It is a struggle for the survival of America. The heart and the soul of America is up for grabs. The vermin on the left have us by the throat. The vermin on the left have us on the ground. The vermin on the left act like they're peace and love. They're the exact opposite of peace and love. They mean to harm the country even further. And I am telling you, there are millions of us. There are more of us than there are of them. The problem is we don't control the media. We don't control the government. In fact, we have no influence over the media, except for a few radio talk shows and an occasional smattering here and there on television of family or American values. You are going to be the people who save this country. It's not going to be me, and it's not going to be we. You say, well, what's he talking about? It's all hyperbole. Well, you could say anything you want. The summer of love washed across the world. The reason that we are suffering today at the hands of Al-Qaeda, the reason we were struck on September 11, 2001, the reason the USS Cole was bombed with no reaction from Bill Clinton, the hippie, the first hippie president, by the way, is precisely because of the perverted values of the summer of love. That's the point I'm trying to make. Now, again, I'm dealing with the summer of love where if you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. If you're going to San Francisco, summertime will be a love in there. Play that song for the people who don't know what I'm talking about. I'd like them to hear a little bit of the summer of love. If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. All right, now let's pause right there. This has been popularly seen as a period of love and idealism, when in fact it was a summer of the collapse of American civilization. The History Channel, Our Generation series on the summer of love, will show you the opposite. But in fact, what it did was usher in the death of the character of America, which we're still trying to recover from. Wide-scale sexual abandon, leading to STDs, leading to AIDS, leading to drug addiction, leading to the homosexualization and the feminization of our youth, all goes back to the summer of love, which began, by the way, during the summer of 1967. Now, what caused all of the excitement was the free sex. And most of the people who hung out in the parks and let their hair grow long and danced around, they were just looking for a little nookie. That's all they wanted. And that's exactly the point I'm trying to make. Sex is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, motivator on the planet for most people. It's a given fact going back to the beginning of time. We all understand that. And when sex is permitted to be used like this, it can be used for very, very bad things as well. In the 1930s, following the depression of the late 1920s, the stock market crash, the Communist Party USA made very, very big inroads amongst the working poor and those who were unemployed. And one of the principal methods they had of gaining members in the Communist Party USA amongst longshoremen and amongst workers in general were putting in communist broads into the recruiting halls. Communist dances were announced. The men went and they got free sex. It was free love. They could care less about communism. All they wanted was what men wanted from the beginning of time. But it was the love, the free love, or the sex that was used to hook the people in. And that brings us to today. It's the pornography and the drugs, stupid.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, I'm going to ask you again. I'm trying to do something that I think is very fun, a lot of fun today, but also very significant to me. 1960s, Summer of Love, hippie generation, Democrat Party, Nancy Pelosi, all of the so-called values, which are non-values of San Francisco, the anti-American, anti-family, anti-military, anti-police values, if you want to call them that, of the hippie generation have infected most of American society, as exemplified by the valueless San Francisco, where child molesters run free, where children on bicycles can surround a minivan with a mother and children in it and break the van, causing $5,300 worth of damage, and the mayor might arrest the woman in the van for having tapped one of their bicycles and not arresting one of the vandals. Don't you understand what I'm trying to tell you, where this all started and how we came to this breakdown of society? Only by understanding the disease can you begin to cure it. Any doctor will tell you that. The problem with many doctors today is that they are not good diagnosticians. They throw pills at everything without even knowing what they're treating. They're treating symptoms. I am not a man who treats symptoms. I was trained as a holistic practitioner. I am a holistic radio talk show host, if you want to use an old phrase. I am trying to diagnose the disease of American society, and then, and only then, can we hope to get over this disease, this fungus that has infected the body politic of this nation. And there is no greater example of it than Gavin Newsom in San Francisco. Here is a man who looks nice, combs his hair nice, smiles nice. He has no character whatsoever. There's no center to the man. It's like anything goes. Anything goes in this city. That is not freedom, my friends. That's anarchy. That is the road to disaster. When you demoralize a city like this, anything can happen, and it is happening. We have the highest homicide rate per capita in the United States of America, both here in that cesspool called Oakland, California. The police chiefs are impotent. They were selected by mayors who were impotent, and they're put in place to make sure that nothing is done about the crime. And what happens is the mayors are rewarded by being bumped up to a higher position. We can't tolerate this. The country cannot survive unless we step in and throw the corrupt hippie bums out. The country is finished. The worst thing you could do would be elect Obama. What is Obama? Obama is a fiction. He's not a hippie. He's even less than a hippie. He stands for nothing. He is nothing. He is a complete fabrication. He was made up by the media. He's a creation of the media. We can't have a creation. We'll talk about politics later on. Now I'm going to talk about you. I want to hear from you whether you're in San Francisco, New York, Green Bay, Los Angeles. Were you raised by hippies? Or were you a hippie? And how did the period that I am talking about change you or warp you? Do any of you regret what you did in the 60s? Do you think it has still affected you to this day? Let's begin. Let us begin with Dee Dee on KNEW in San Francisco, the epicenter of the meltdown of America's society. Dee Dee, welcome to the Savage Nation. Come before the audience and give us your testament.
I grew up between 6th and 7th on Irving Street in 1967, and I was only 4 at the time, and it was the first time I'd ever experienced the hippie thing that was going on. And I used to walk with my sister over to the children's playground, and it used to be a beautiful park. And one day as I was walking over there, it was full of these dirty, stinky, smelly god-awful people, and my sister actually had to cover my eyes and run with me to the park because we were being chased by wackos. Fortunately, my parents were wise enough to move me out of there, and I haven't lived there for over 30 years. But it used to be a beautiful city and a safe city at that.
Well, we once had one of the most beautiful parks in the world, Golden Gate Park, but then it was invaded by the perverts who drove the families out. To this day, the perverts rut like sick animals in a certain part of San Francisco's Golden Gate Park. They do it openly. The families will not go into that cesspool of a park where the perverts do this to each other. And the mayor and the police chief look the other way. I understand that. I mean, if you were talking about the age of the reptiles, you couldn't do a better job than talk about San Francisco. The reptiles took over this country. The reptiles have poisoned the nation. The reptiles have morally melted the nation down to make you think that perversion is the norm and the normal people are the perverts. They've melted the country down to the point that you think that the honest, straight priest is the enemy. It's unbelievable to me how far we have fallen. It's only men like me, like Samson, trying to hold up the world and we're going to save this country. And you can laugh at me if you want. I don't really care. There are a handful of us left on this planet, in the media in particular, who can save the country. I'm one of them. There are quite a few of us outside the media, but they're powerless. They don't know what to do. They see what's going on to their children in school. They see how they're brainwashed by the child psychologists, by the NEA, by the Ritalin pushing drug peddlers. They understand what's going on. Mark, WOR, New York, your opinion, please.
I'm a recovering alcoholic and heroin addict. I was out in San Francisco in 1967. I drove across country from Jersey with a friend of mine by the name of Straight Jacket Jack. And San Francisco was not the city of love. It was not about flower power when I got out there. It was all about heroin use. It was all about drugs. It was degradation personified. You're right on, Michael.
Well, no, I understand. You were a product. You're actually one of the victims of the propaganda of Timothy Leary, Allen Ginsberg, and Kunstler. And the city has never grown up. In fact, it's the same cesspool it was then. In some ways, it's much worse because right now we have a homicide rate that's being swept under the rug by the so-called publisher of the newspaper here, the so-called newspaper, in order to not let people understand what's going on in the streets of the city under this sham of a police chief. Thanks for the call.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
A couple of years back, I had an air conditioning system put into my house by a legitimate air conditioning firm, but I didn't know who he was using for labor. Well, today I had an American air conditioning man go in, a guy I know, to look at adding something for me. He said, "Do you know that your panel is burned out from what this guy put in? You could have burnt your house down." That's what we're talking about here, Mark. I had no idea he used the substandard electrician. I thought he used the union electrician. I had no way of checking.
But that's what they're using. They're using nothing but illegals.
Right. He got some guy who learned it in a trade school in Guadalajara, if that, or picked it up along the way. He didn't tell me that. He used somebody, some illegal alien, probably relative, and passed on the money he saved into his own pocket. I didn't ask him to use a cheap electrician when he put the air conditioning in. So this is what we're talking about. Thanks. See, I'm a lucky guy because I come from a blue-collar background. Otherwise, I don't know what I'd be. It's very good to have your feet on the ground and know what reality is. And I don't know how a person who grew up in living off the fat of the land where everything is handed to them can know really what's going on down on the street level. I guess that's what I'm very lucky in a way that my father was so mean to me. To me, mean. I mean, I didn't want to do what he made me do. To me, it seemed mean. But he was right in a way. We fought like crazy. But I'll never forget to this day the day he dragged me out of that house and said, "That's it." I'm never the fight. It's going to be in my book, by the way, my autobiography. The reason I'm living through all of this again is because I'm reviewing all the stories over the years that I've told, and I had them printed up, and I'm editing them. And I found the one where I was a kid sitting at home every night. I was talking about watching Walter Cronkite on the news at night. And I'm eating a steak, I'm eating French fries, and I'm eating cherry vanilla ice cream every night like a fat little porker. And my father comes in 6 o'clock gray from the day's struggle over the Queensboro, over the bridge and the tunnel. And God knows if business was no good, he's white from the day and from the commute. And here's his fat number one son sitting there with being, you know, fed like King Farouk, the steak, the fries, the cherry vanilla ice cream. In other words, a heart attack diet. And he turns gray as a ghost seeing that I'm – so he says to my mother one day, I must have been 12, that's it. You're ruining the kid. This is over. He's coming into the market with me every Saturday from now on. No, I don't care what you want. You're coming in. So I went from this spoiled little world down into a Dickensian basement in his store where I had to work like a Bowery bum cleaning the bronze statues with the cyanide solution. I've told the story before. I don't want to tell it again. It'll be in my autobiography. But the point I'm making is I resented it. But in a way, I mean, I learned an awful lot about hard labor, horrible labor, disgusting work, and I was able to do it. And to this day, I got to tell you something. Once you're trained to work, once you're committed to being a worker, you can't stop. There's no retirement. Because once you, what do I mean retirement? I don't even know what the word means. I'm an inner city kid. I'm not proud of it. I'm not unproud of it. I never really learned to play tennis. I never learned to play golf. I know friends who grew up in the same milieu I did who early on took up tennis and golf. And I, you know, that's what they want, fine. I never found it interesting. I found the games too slow. It's like watching paint dry to me to play tennis or golf. And I know it requires skill. Don't get me wrong. I'm not just blowing it off. It takes tremendous skill, but boring? I can't believe it. I'd rather roll on the rug and play with my dog and stick my fingers in his mouth and pull on his canine teeth than play golf. But if you like it, God bless you. And it's a tough game to do right. The point is a little different. When I went to college, skiing just became big in America. I remember, and some of the guys I grew up with took up skiing in Mount Snow in Vermont. I got the ski pants, but I never took up skiing. I liked the outfit. I thought that they would attract girls, so I got ski pants. And they worked. I got to tell you the truth. In those days, it was before I could afford to eat a lot, so consequently, the ski pants had their benefits. But I never took up skiing. I learned how to use a sled. And it was fun to go down hills in the Bronx on a sled. I almost got killed under a truck. To this day, I can remember the truck. Remember the days? Could you imagine I grew up in a time when trucks had chain drives on them? Monster trucks that had chain drives going around the wheels. So a kid's uncle, but we put three of us on a sled. The uncle must have been 20. To me, he was an old man. All three of us bellied up on a sled, American Flyer, I think, whatever. Who knows what it was. And was shooting down a hill, and he lost control of the sled. I swear to God, it went under the truck as it was moving. I thought we were going to be crushed and shot out on the other side of the truck. It shows you what kids go through. They can die by accident for no reason whatsoever. But I've worked. I've worked minimum wage jobs. I worked in an ice cream factory. Horrible, disgusting summer job. Putting ice cream bars inside a I'm on a line in a factory. You ever work in a factory? Well, don't talk about the minimum wage unless you have. You try putting 24 bars of frozen ice cream inside a box as it comes by you in about X number of seconds. And if you miss that box, the foreman, who was a little Italian guy up on a platform, was like out of slavery times. He screamed at everybody all day long. It reminded him of me today. He stood up there on the top, and he's watching the line go around. There must have been 200 people. Most of them were young Puerto Rican women and men, if I remember the factory correctly. And I had a summer job. I was glad to get it. My friend's father owned the ice cream factory. Didn't do me any good. They put me on the production line. So you had to fill the box. The boxes are coming around. I don't know how many seconds. You had to stuff them in 5 seconds, let's say. If you missed your 24 bars in that box, he stopped the line. He hit a button, the overseer. And he yelled out, "You moron idiot, you. Look what you made me do, you stupid moron." Oh, those were the days. I had a teacher, for example. I can't mention his name. He had two fingers on the right hand. How did he have two fingers? It was alleged he was in the IRA and he blew a hand off putting in a bomb somewhere. Now, he happened to be a wonderful math teacher. I don't know whether it was a bomb or whatever, or he was born that way. But this guy, Mr. W, was a tough guy of the old school type. And when the tests would come back, you sat there in fear. You shook. You sweat. because you knew what was coming. He would read out your name and your grade. And believe me, if you were a dummy and you got a low grade, he'd make you come up to the blackboard for everyone to look at you like you were the big dummy you were, and you dreaded it. That's what made you study. You didn't want to be humiliated in front of the kids. Now, today, the opposite is true. Today, they take the moron and put the moron in front of the class and tell you that the moron is smarter than you are. And the smart kid has to hide his smartness because you're living in a communistic America. This is a communist system we haven't developed in this stupid country of ours. Don't play tag. You're liable to make children feel inferior. Don't do this. Don't do that. And that's why we're a nation of losers.
Savage.
I am now going to define for you the difference between Republicans and conservatives. You see, right now there are voices on the radio who call themselves conservatives who are propagandizing the airwaves. That's all they're doing, is they're propagandists. You can hear, for example, the golfer defending high gas prices as a necessary part of the free market. You can hear the golfer bellowing that there shouldn't be an FDA to protect us from salmonella. You can hear the golfer pontificate that illegal aliens are just doing the jobs Americans won't do. You can hear the golfer flying around in his Gulfstream attacking the minimum wage as being anti-job. Now, this is pure rubbish. People like him are globalist liberals masquerading as free marketeers. They themselves are free marketeers, by the way. And many people who listen to these people have drunk the golfer's Kool-Aid. More importantly, while they may be Republicans, they are most definitely not conservatives. And I've said this to you time and time again on the radio show you're listening to. Michael Savage is a conservative, not a Republican. There's a huge difference between the two. For example, Republicans offer AIDS money to Africa. Look what Bush has been doing, pumping billions and billions of tax dollars to a foreign nation to treat AIDS when most of the money is being stolen and not used for AIDS, by the way. Well, conservatives offer aid to working Americans, not aid for Africa. Republicans are for letting the free market decide that $5 a gallon gas is okay, while conservatives are for compelling foreign oil producers to increase production and reduce prices using force if necessary. That's what our military is for, to protect the national interest. That's what it's for. We're not using it, are we? That's because we are run by Republicans, not conservatives. Republicans are for bailing out billionaire money manipulators on Wall Street while you wait online at the hospital behind an illegal alien in the emergency room. Conservatives are for letting Wall Street hucksters pay for their own mistakes and sending the illegals back to Mexico. Republicans are for letting market forces decide if your food has fecal matter in it, while conservatives are for enforcing basic food safety standards so that Mexican farm workers can't crap in the fields and make you sick. Republicans think bringing in illegal aliens is amnesty. Conservatives think bringing in illegal aliens is a travesty. Republicans want a strong global economy. Conservatives want a strong country. Republicans think that child porn on the internet is freedom from government. Conservatives know that smut is a poison that must be snuffed out. America thought Bush was a conservative. He turned out to be just a Republican. And while there are Republicans who are conservatives as well, please don't let the R after the name fool you. Let the voter and the listener beware. I'm Michael Savage. I approve of this monologue play. Roll out the barrel, please, as we roll into a second gear on the Savage Nation. Now play John McCain on beer.
If that authority is entrusted to me, I will use the veto as needed. I will veto every single bill with earmarks.
Oh, God. Well, as I said, at least he isn't going to veto my beard. I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Since I've had my espresso, and since I'm not going to sleep tonight anyway because I'm sacrificing tonight's sleep for today's show, as I did last night. I've been up, I think, for about 36 No, I slept, but I didn't sleep. It was like a tossed, horrible, you know, the nightmares were daymares in the middle of the night. But there was nowhere to go in there. The problem is I have nothing to do in the middle of the night. What do you do in the middle of the night when you can't sleep? I have answers to that, too. Because there was a period in my life that I was totally insomniac, and I thought I would die from a lack of sleep. And then I read a lot of books on insomnia, and I found out that insomnia can be your best friend. What it means is you don't really need to sleep. You're not tired. Most of us sleep when we don't even have to, incidentally. This is a myth that you have to sleep. It's like a myth like you have to have three meals a day, or that you have to drink eight glasses of water or three cups of milk a day or whatever. You're not tired, so you're not sleeping. The trick is to not lay in bed. I remember reading one book during this period when I couldn't sleep, and it was mainly money worries. It was money worries because of a lot of reasons, whatever. The kids were young, and I was worried about their future and my future, and what am I going to do? And I killed myself, and they won't hire me because I'm a white male, and they're hiring idiots and morons and putting them into jobs they're not qualified for, and perverts, which, of course, was 100% true. Just take a look at your universities today, putting what they're doing in the universities outside the science departments, which, of course, unfortunately for them, they can't yet populate with their inferior plants, because either you understand the periodic table of the elements or you don't. You can't quite do what you do in the social sciences. Nevertheless, I'm up, I'm this and that. So I get a book that says more people have died worrying about a lack of sleep than from a lack of sleep, and I forget who wrote the book. And it was like 10 things you could do. Someone's going to write this down, steal it, and make a book out of it probably. That's okay. I don't really care. Go ahead and do it. And I learned a lot of different techniques. The number one thing was I went out on my deck and looked at the stars. And that's when I started to love stars again after childhood. You see, okay, I'm up. It's dark. The sky is black. The stars are bright. What am I going to do with the time? How about getting out a book that shows me star formations? So there they were. And slowly, you know, and the next one is learn to read, learn to do this, learn to do that. And before long, when you stop worrying about not sleeping, you wind up sleeping again. It's like everything else. You understand that or not? Sure, it's like everything else. Is, you know, there used to be an adage amongst guys that a lot of guys are always hungry for a date for a woman and they couldn't get one. And the guys who did always had the same story to tell, which is that women can tell when you're nervous and you want a woman and they'll avoid you like you have leprosy. That the only guys women want are the ones who don't want them or let's say are aloof and really don't care. It's a terrible reality. It's the same the other way too, by the way. You know, you get desperate, the other party can sense it like an animal. Well, how was it put? We pursue that which retreats. Have you heard that one in the dating world? It's pretty much true in the business world as well. We pursue that which retreats. So the best thing to do is retreat even when you want to pursue in most cases. It's a terrible rule, but it's like hunting and you ask a hunter. There's only one way to hunt, or there's only a particular few ways to hunt, and none of them consist of rushing right at the animals. But that's neither here nor there. So let's go back to the insomnia before I get too far off the track. There are many other things you can do. And, of course, I learned to use passion flower herbal tea. I was very into the whole story there. And that's a great – wait, hold it. There's my story. Let me tell you how I learned to use passion flower herbal tea and how not only did it give me relief from insomnia, but I then learned to carry this tea around with me all over the world in my travels. And it became a great relaxant on airplanes. I didn't have to drink any alcohol. I didn't need the two little bottles of wine that they used to have in those days. Remember those days when they served you wine in those two little bottles that you got? The El Cheapo wine bottles that were on airplanes? Now it's bottled wine. Well, anyway, so I heard about a guy, a pharmacist in San Francisco on Ellis Street. He was like an old guy, about 85, 88 at the time. And he was an old timer going way, way back. I don't know what his name was. He was an old Jewish guy named Morris. He was right near the Glide Memorial Church, as a matter of fact, which is a largely African-American a church. And I forget the name of the pharmacy. He's since passed on. I go in there because I heard he knew everything about herbal medicine. He was a real pharmacist as opposed to people who were faking it with chlamydia and half mustaches in the health food stores. And I come in and right away I say to him, do you have a passion flower herbal tea? See, he says to me, why, who are you? What do you want? It was like right out of Brooklyn, and the guy, it was in San Francisco. I said, no, I just, he said, what, are you an inspector with the FDA? I have nothing. Get out of my store. That's how it started. I don't have nothing. I have no herbal tea, he says to me. That's all he sold. So I said to him, well, I heard you sell herbal tea. I don't know who you heard from. I have nothing here. I'm a regular drugstore. So I said, calm down. And I had to show him one of my books. He was afraid I was an inspector, in other words. I think he had been busted by the FDA for selling real products that work called herbal medicine instead of toxic chemicals that killed and addicted people called pharmaceuticals. So we got to talk, and he said, what's your problem? I said, I can't sleep. He says, look, mister, you're still wasting your time. He said, go across the street to Joe's Bar and have two shots of scotch and go home. You'll fall asleep. I have nothing for you. Well, eventually he gave me the passion flower herbal tea. I used it. I would brew it every night, and I slept like a baby in the arms of Buddha.
Savage.
Denise in Seattle, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How are you? Oh, I'm not supposed to ask.
Oh, God. Come on, please, don't ask me how I am. What's your point?
Oh, well, don't get mad at me.
Oh, hey, please, that's number two. One more and you're out. Please, Denise, make your point.
I wanted to know how old your mom was when she came to you in your dream.
Oh, my God. She was younger. She was much younger.
I wanted to ask you because my dad has come to me, and he's just glowing, and he's much younger.
Yeah, I mean, I could be very mundane about it now and knock the whole thing out and get away from the spiritual, and I don't want to do it because it was a beautiful moment, but I don't know if it's real. Because I think the reason I saw her in my dream is because I found a cube with pictures in it, like was like hidden away, a cube from when she was young, when my kids were young. And I looked at it the other day, and I marveled at how beautiful she was, God bless her soul. So maybe it's just looking at the picture comes back. Who knows? This is the beautiful thing about being a human being. We don't know any of the answers to this. So you may as well imagine there's a heaven. You may as well imagine that you're punished if you're bad. And he knows when you've been happy. He knows. Ding-a-ling, here's the peppermint. He knows when you've been good or bad. So be good for goodness sake. Hey, Bing Crosby, snowman, mama in the thing, and daddy in the – everyone's normal. The people were in the closet. The other one, the bad guys were caught. The cops hit him with the clubs and put him away, and there were no bad people. I understand the postcard view of life. It's not the way it is unless you want to live in that world, and you can. Who's to stop you from living in that world? He knows when you've been good or bad, so be good for goodness sake. You know, all right, so you could live in that. Tell your children about Santa Claus if you want. Or if you don't want – then turn your child into a sick gothic who'll get black fingernails and hit someone with a piece of molding.
You're listening to an encore broadcast.